Welcome to the WR Immigration Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Mr. Oppenheim, thank you so much for joining us today. It really is a pleasure to have you on WR Immigration. Our firm, WR Immigration, has 9 offices throughout the United States. We're over 200 people. The firm is over 35 years old. I have the pleasure of having founded this firm and watching it grow. So we are most honored to have you in a consulting role as Director of Visa Control after 23 years in the State Department. Charlie, can you briefly describe what your job was there and explain to us how the Visa Bulletin works?
Yes, and I'd like to say I'm very excited to have accepted my new position with the firm. It was a unique opportunity for me, and I'm very appreciative of it being offered. In my position as chief of the numerical control process at the U.S. Department of State, I oversaw the annual limits and attempted to maximize number use on a worldwide basis. And the decisions I made over the years resulted in over 9 million applicants either receiving their visas at an overseas post or being issued a, quote, green card at a USCIS office in the U.S.
So, Charlie, we recently did a program focusing on employment-based visas. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but we basically have 3 categories. We have the immediate relative category, which is the spouse of a U.S. citizen, parent of a U.S. citizen, or minor child of a U.S. citizen. They are exempt from the numerically controlled, and the Visa Bulletin does not mention them because they're not subject to the waiting line. But let's take the family-based categories, sponsorship-based categories. So approximately every year, 226,000 family-sponsored visas are available for annual distribution. So that would be one principal applicant together with minor children. Each one counts as a derivative. Approximately 226,000 plus certain unused family employment visas would cross over into the family category. My understanding is there's not many of them. Is that more or less how Section 201 of the INA works with regard to the Immigration and Nationality Act with regard to annual distribution and the minimum family-sponsored limits are set?
Yes, it is. The family-sponsored annual limit is 226,000 a year, and unless there is a change to the immigration law, it will remain at 226 for the foreseeable future. And those numbers are divided up among 4 different categories in which applicants can qualify for their use.
So, Charlie, each one of these categories gets 7% of the annual limitation. And then I guess for dependent areas like Hong Kong and some of the other dependent areas, it's 2%. But for each one of the family and employment, there's a 7% total annual limit per country. And then, of course, leftover visas in those categories do cross over into backlog categories. Is that more or less accurate in terms of family visas, unused family visas crossing over?
Correct. The 7% annual limit is applied to the overall 226,000 limit. And the reason for the 7% limit is to prevent a handful of countries from monopolizing the use of the numbers in each of the categories.
So, Charlie, we briefly spoke, well, we extensively spoke about employment visas, and the employment visa categories are generally much better than the family-sponsored visa categories. We have five basic categories. They really call it four because some of them are subsets. But in the Visa Bulletin, there's a breakdown of five categories under the final action date. Now, the final action date, when you file your petition, you get a place in the waiting line. So you file your I-130 petition, immigrant visa petition, you get your place in the waiting line, and then you have to wait for your number to come up, and then you can either process your green card through the consulate or embassy in your home country, or if you're legally in the United States, you can file to adjust your status in the U.S. So there's basically two paths, but the most important thing is you have to have a current final action date in order to be approved, what we call Chart A, and then we have Chart B, which is the State Department's prediction of where you'll be at the end of the fiscal year. And then USCIS every month will tell you whether you can file off Chart A or Chart B. And they publish that on the USCIS website on a monthly basis. Am I getting this more or less correct, Charlie?
Yes. Approximately 95% of the family-sponsored visas are processed overseas. Only maybe up to 5% of those are result in adjustment of status within the U.S.
Numerically controlled, right? The immediate relative.
Correct.
Probably higher.
Correct. So that it would be the numerically controlled family preference categories, approximately 5% processed in the U.S., 95% processed at overseas posts.
All right, so let's drill down on the four categories. The second preference has F2A and F2B, but let's drill down basically on these. Now, whenever I'm giving a lecture on family immigration, I normally start off with a simple one-liner. Other than the F2A, spouse and minor child of a permanent resident, they all terrible. That's how I pitch, because you could spend hours talking about it, but at the end of the day, unless you are the spouse or minor child of a permanent resident, and again, we're not talking about immediate relatives now. Immediate relatives are the spouse, parent, or minor child. They have no waiting line. But the F2A second preference category is the spouse or minor child of a permanent resident. And that category is current. It's not always been current, but it is current as of the present time. So, Charlie, tell us a little bit about F2A, spouse or minor child of a second preference. It's current at the moment. You're expecting it to remain current?
I think it will remain current for the foreseeable future and on a rest of world basis, well, for all countries other than Mexico. I believe that a final action date in the 2A category will be applied to Mexican applicants at some point during fiscal 2023, with the rest of the world most likely remaining current, or if a date were applied, it would be relatively close to the actual calendar date.
Well, message to Mexican nationals out there, if you're ready to propose, don't wait. Now would be the time to buy that wedding ring and drop down on one knee and make the proposal. That's probably a little bit sexist because girls propose too. So you don't drop down on one knee. They won't probably. I'm probably saying the wrong thing, so I better just shut up. But my point of making the joke is, this is for people who are permanent residents. Now, if I understand correctly, Charlie, if you're about to get a green card and you marry before the green card is issued, then your spouse actually qualifies as a following to join derivative, doesn't need a petition. Am I correct on this?
Yes, you are.
So if you are married, even though your spouse doesn't have a green card, he or she can follow to join without an I-130 petition, provided it was a good faith marriage, of course, that took place prior to the marriage, and they can then follow to join without. But what happens, Charlie, if it backlogs? If it backlogs and retrogresses and we have a cutoff date, then the following to join has to wait for their number to come up, correct? The principal's number to come up, right?
Exactly. The principal applicant's priority date would apply to the processing of their spouse. And it is always the final action date at the time the case can be issued at an overseas post, or adjustment of status could occur in the U.S. That is the date which is applied, not what it was when the person initially filed for their visa or they were processed.
Well, that is incredibly valuable, and it also confirms what I've always been worried about, that this can be very, very confusing. Family cutoff dates, we haven't got into the question of Child Status Protection Act and locking and freezing of dates. That's a separate topic. We're just going to run through what I'm calling the basics, and even the basics gets complicated. So let's kick off now with the family first preference category. That is for the unmarried sons and daughters of U.S. citizens. They get 23,000 plus any unused numbers from the fourth preference. So the first preference category, unmarried sons and daughters of U.S. citizens. So Charlie, generally speaking, the priority date I see December 2014, minimum 7, 8, 9, 10 years approximately. Is that accurate, sir?
Yeah, it might even be, could be more. There is a large number of these applicants. Viewers will realize that the final action dates for most of the family categories have not moved in approximately a year and a half to two fiscal years. I believe that they will start moving slowly forward at some point later this fiscal year, but right now there is a large amount of demand that was not able to be processed at overseas post in recent years because of the COVID-related issues.
Charlie, bottom line is long, long waits. And if I get married during that time, that is the end of the case, unless my parents naturalized before I got married, in which case I would move from the first preference to the third preference category, which is for the married. So you can carry your priority date, provided your parents naturalize and become U.S. citizens. But if you get married before your parents naturalize, you're stuck in the first preference. You lose out from the first preference and you do not qualify for third pref. So don't get married if you are in this line until your parents naturalize. Then you can move to the third preference category, which is unfortunately much, much worse. The married child of third pref is backlogged to about 2008. So you've got a horrible 12 to 15 year waiting line if you are the married child of a U.S. citizen. Am I reading correctly, sir?
Well, you are correct in terms of the issue. The first preference and the third preference are sons or daughters of U.S. citizens. The difference is the family first preference are the unmarried sons and daughters of U.S. citizens. So as you say, if you were to get married before your turn comes up, you would move from first to third preference category and typically extend your wait time by several years.
Right. But the point that I'm also trying to make here is that sometimes what'll happen, for example, under the family second preference category, which is adult children of permanent residents, is that the parents will naturalize.
Oh.
So you can then move from family second pref up to first preference.
Correct.
And then that is if you're unmarried. And then if you get married, you would then drop down into the family third pref category, correct? Am
correct.
I getting
yes.
this right?
Yeah,
sorry,
Exactly. I didn't realize you were including the to be unmarried sons and daughters.
Well, you do have to be specific,
yeah.
And probably I wasn't sufficiently specific. But I'm starting off with the fact that I'm aged out. My parents got green cards through employment sponsorship. I'm over 21. They didn't benefit from Child Status Protection Act. I'm 25. I aged out. My parents file a petition for me under the F2B category. And the F2B category is backlogged 8 to 10 years. And then my parents naturalize. So I could then opt into the first preference category, which quite frankly, F1 is not better than, so even though my parents naturalized. But if I get married, I then cross over into the family third preference category with an even worse waiting line. Look, here's the bottom line. Other than the spouse or child of a permanent resident, all of these waiting lines are horrific. And I hate to talk like this, but I often have the female petition because both parents could file petitions, maybe file two, because it's proven fact that women live longer. I've had the situation, they wait 10, 15 years, and then the petitioner dies, and sadly, there's no family. I know there's a humanitarian reinstatement under 204L in some cases, but reality is that these are terrible waiting lines. Now, let's drill down. Actually, we'll touch one more. We'll do the sibling category. I get this all the time. Oh, my brother's a U.S. citizen. My sister's a U.S. citizen. I want to file for a green card. When can I pick it up? And I normally say, yeah, good idea. Go ahead. You may not be able to get a tourist visa, by the way, but depends. But those waiting lines, I tell people at least 15 years based on current estimate. Do you want to give us an estimate of what you think the worldwide chargeability for F4 sibling petitions is, Charlie?
Give you an answer in a different way. The annual limit in the fourth preference on a worldwide basis is 65,000 numbers. There are over 2 million applicants who have petitions in the family fourth preference category. So you
Shocking.
Have well over 2 million people, probably much higher, competing for 65,000 visas a year.
And sorry if I'm going to be morbid, but a lot of those people will die before they get green cards. So it's not exactly 2 million. I shouldn't be making a joke of this, but I just want to tell people that if you're going to file for your sibling, that's a very nice thing to do. Please be aware that it could impact to some degree your ability to get a non-immigrant visa, which requires unrelinquished domicile abroad. But the bottom line is, I tell people if you're in worldwide chargeability that you're going to wait at least 15 years. Good luck with the filing. We are immigration lawyers. We file these things all the time. I prefer not to file these petitions because I don't know if I'm going to be at my desk 15 years from now. I expect to be, but I don't know. So, That's how bad it is under the family fourth pref. I'm shocked to hear 2 million. So in my opinion, most of them are just paying filing fees for nothing, but that's a shot at the family fourth. I would say if you've got a high school diploma, take a shot at the lottery. You've probably got a better chance of getting a green card in the next few years because they issue 55,000 visas under the diversity lottery. And if you win, you could get a green card within a year. And all you need is a high school diploma, or in some cases, 2 years of a sophisticated work experience. So, Charlie, what we've learned today is that the unmarried child of a permanent resident, F2A, has a reasonable wait, pretty much current. All the other categories range from 7 or 8 years optimistically to 15 plus years. So they're terrible waiting lines. They're not moving. If you want to get a green card, you may want to look at the lottery. Of course, the high demand countries are not eligible for the lottery. So that's not a solution. So you're stuck with the employment category, employment sponsorship category, or you're out of luck. At the end of the day, not everybody gets to immigrate. Now, we're not talking about other things like political asylum, cancellation of removal, humanitarian paroles, refugees, asylees. I mean, at the end of the day, the U.S. admits hundreds of thousands of immigrants. We're talking about the general legal employment and family-based sponsorship system, excluding the immediate relatives. But at the end of the day, the family waiting lines are terrible. Now, Charlie, I do need to drill down on two countries. That is Mexico and the Philippines. Because I said these categories were bad for almost everybody except spouse or minor children of permanent residents. But for Mexican nationals and the Philippines, which is a former colony, of course, they're not bad. They're terrible. And those waiting lines are even longer. I'm not going to drill down, but the sibling category for Mexican national, you know, is August 2000. So that's 23 years, but it's really more like 30 or 40, except most of the people won't be alive in 40 years. So I don't even want to know how many are in there. But just if you are born or chargeable to Mexico, or the Philippines, these waiting lines are beyond bad. They are absurd.
Exactly. To give you a perfect example of how bad, if you are a Mexican third preference applicant, you're the son or daughter of a U.S. citizen Mexican, your parent would have had to file for you before November 1st of 1997 for you to be eligible for processing during the month of January.
Terrible. But on the other hand, remember, we're talking about immigrant visas or green cards. There are many other options for Mexican nationals. There's the TN work visa, treaty national work visa, mainly for professionals, and thousands of them are issued. There's H-2A agriculture, H-2B temporary workers. There's H-1B. We could go through the whole smorgasbord of non-immigrant visas. But under what was NAFTA, there are many opportunities for Mexican nationals to work in the U.S. What we're talking now is the family-based green card. And then the employment green card categories for Mexicans isn't that bad, generally speaking. So, but the family options are, quite frankly, not good. And similarly with the Philippines, very long family waiting lines. Charlie, I've learned a lot today. Thank you so much for your time in going through this, what I call Family 101 immigrant visa categories. For more information, go to travel.state.gov. The State Department website has got an enormous amount of immigration information on these various sponsorship. You can also go to uscis.gov. And giving a little plug for our firm, my name is Bernard Wolfsdorf. I'm the former president of the American Immigration Lawyers. an association with 17,000 members. I am very pleased and privileged to have Charles Oppenheim, former director of visa control for the United States Department of State, help us understand these family-based immigration categories characterized by long waiting lines. And thank you so much, Charlie, for spending your time with us today. My understanding is you will be doing a monthly update on the Visa Bulletin every month under the category Chatting with Charlie. Go to YouTube, search Chatting with Charlie, or go to our website, wolfsdorf.com. If you can spell my last name, you get a free green card. Sorry, I've got to be serious here. Nobody can spell it, Charlie. So you better just type in Chatting with Charlie, and that's not Chat with Charlie. If you do Chat with Charlie, you will get the State Department YouTube, which Charlie was previously doing before he retired. Lots of valuable information there, too. They were getting, 70,000 views. We hope to be getting 100,000 views. I don't know. Now that it's not the official, if you see the WR logo, that means you're on Wolfsdorf's website. We are a private law firm. I'm based in Los Angeles. We have 9 offices throughout the United States. Charlie is no longer with the State Department. He's in Charlotte. I can't say he's enjoying retirement because we're keeping him busy. And he's busy looking after his grandkids. So, Charlie, thank you so much for joining us. And hopefully we will be able to provide regular updates to, to the whole world. And we are focused on employment and family. This one was for family. So hope you've all find this information useful. If you need to reach out to me, Visa Law at my last name, Wolfsdorf, Visa Law, VISALAW, Law at Wolfsdorf, WOLF, Wolf like the animal, S for Sam, DORF, Wolfsdorf.com. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you again, Charlie, for sharing your wisdom and insight on family immigration. And this is Bernie Wolfsdorf signing off for today.
Thank you for listening to the WR Immigration Podcast. We hope you found this enjoyable. If you have further questions, please reach out to us at visalaw@wolfsdorf.com.